Welcome to Season 5 of Ye Olde Dragon's Library, the storytelling podcast. Each episode this season will be a chapter from the second book in the Enchanted Castle Archives, The Beastly Beauty. In Season 1, our heroine, Ash, was warned multiple times to stay away from the Enchanted Castle, and if she ever saw it coming toward her, to run. Now, she finds the Enchanted Castle, or perhaps more accurately, it finds her. Will prophecy come true? Can she escape when she finds out the truth of Cecil's warning that every castle wants a princess? Listen and find out. Chapter 24. The Purple Sky were a talkative, argumentative bunch who couldn't work together. Glint found it amusing, in an ironic way, to listen to them argue and get into fist fights when their spells didn't work. They were clearly desperate and frustrated. They were focused on confiscating all the magical artifacts they could find, to siphon off the power and add it to their own before they could complete their mission. The defensive spells around previous targets had drained them. Several of those spells had attached to them, creating a leak in their power stores. "According to Glint," Isolova said, and shuddered inside her padded box, "they're all dressed like that inexplicably popular sect that has unfortunately crossed over the ocean, the Prosperidians." "I never heard of them. What do they believe?" Ash flinched the moment the words left her lips. She had the awful feeling she really didn't want to know. Then again, it was best to know everything possible about her enemies before she faced them. "It's a new wording for the old foolishness," the mirror said, punctuated by a long sigh. "They insist that Athiosius never wanted his followers to enjoy anything in life. They have to earn their way into his presence and reward. Why in the world would anyone come up with such a contrarian idea? Look at the incredible world Athiosius made for us, all the color and variety and beauty. Why wouldn't the Maker want us to enjoy what he made? And besides, any fool who can read, or at least listen to someone reading the Holy Writ, knows it's impossible to earn their way through the judging door. Athiosius states it flat out in 63 places in just the books of Banipal the Seer, not to mention the 105 other visionaries and prophets who compiled the scrolls of the Holy Writ." She made a sound like she wished she could spit and get a foul taste out of her mouth. Unfortunately, magic mirrors didn't have mouths. While yes, they could take on faces if they wished, to make their masters or the people who consulted them more comfortable, those mouths didn't take in breath or food and certainly couldn't spit or bite. Isolova had admitted to Ash, during one long night of hilarious, ridiculous stories, that she had wished she could take a bite out of a large number of imbeciles who thought a magic mirror could solve all their problems. Not a one of them could comprehend that they had to ask the right question before she could give them the right answer. Not a small number of them had tried to smash her when she failed to read their teeny-tiny minds and unravel what they couldn't decipher for themselves. "That certainly sounds like someone who would accept every lying word Lathia said and throw themselves wholeheartedly into punishing people who said no to her," Ash said. She thought perhaps she was still partly asleep, because she wanted to laugh. Then they reached the portal. This one was less than an hour from the castle. It was an overgrown arch of brambles. Clusters of dried berries clung to the brambles, which had lost all their leaves, an indication of the weather in the land ahead of them. Signs of harvest were everywhere on the other side of the portal, spread across a rolling plain, golden with sheaves of wheat, clusters of corn stalks bundled together, piles of hay, all sitting on scalped fields, ringed with towering trees brilliant with gold and scarlet leaves. Ash inhaled deeply, catching that tangy fall scent of ground tilled for the planting of winter wheat, bonfires, and the perfume of smokehouses full of freshly butchered hogs and deer. Andros's tower stuck up from the rolling plains dotted with small farmhouses and tall barns, visible for miles in every direction. It was at least 6 stories tall, and Ash's legs ached for a moment, considering how many times someone had to climb all those stairs in the course of a day. Lady Charlotte's study had been on the third floor of the tallest tower in Castle Fairhold, and that was considered quite a climb for an elderly lady. She always laughed and claimed that the exercise kept her strong and alert, and helped to keep away pesky folk who could stand to learn more moderation in their drinking and eating. They emerged through the portal at the beginning of sunset. Fang snarled and ducked under the bench seat. He slapped Ash's leg, and she bent down to look at him. He held out the shirt she had modified, what felt like a lifetime ago, to protect him from sunlight. The effects of the wolf mask made her much more limber and flexible, and she had no trouble sliding down to kneel in the space in front of the bench and reach under to help him scramble into the shirt. "We need to find you something better, more protective and worthy of your dignity," she told him. She refrained from adding that the beastly beauty, because she rather liked the title, had some dignity to uphold as well. She wouldn't be taken seriously and feared properly if she was accompanied by an oversized bunny hopping around swathed in a ragged old shirt with sleeves on his ears. Fang chattered about colors and materials as he leaped down from the wagon and darted ahead of them to scout out the situation around the tower. The wagon had gone perhaps another mile and reached a low point in the landscape with a wide, shallow river cutting through it when he returned. He smelled of brimstone, and scorch marks streaked his shirt. The sleeve protecting his left ear was missing, and he had his ear folded flat inside the hood. The purple sky magicians were lobbing buckets of tar at the tower doors and windows, and then firing crossbow bolts coated in brimstone and set on fire. Andros's defensive spells created a gap between the tower itself and the shield, so the tar slid down to the ground. The tower sat on a small hillock, mostly rock, and the tar spilled downhill toward the magicians. They were too busy scorching their fingers and stamping out the fires on their crossbows to notice the streaks and fingers and puddles of tar surrounding them, until someone caught their robes on fire and stumbled into a puddle, which immediately erupted in flames. Tar usually didn't catch fire that easily, with a whoosh and a gush of hot wind, but apparently the tar was enchanted to burn far more rapidly than normal. Fang had bounced into the chaos that resulted. Some of the magicians tried to put out their burning companions. They set themselves on fire when they spattered tar all over themselves. When others burst out laughing, several magicians leaped in with fists flying to defend their burning friend's honor. Fang got spattered with tar. Several magicians shot fire from their fingertips against their companions, and he got singed in the crossfire. "Why didn't they just shoot fire from their fingers instead of fussing with the crossbows?" Ash wanted to know. "They strike me as a bunch who want to look far more elegant and crafty than they really are," Izalova said. "Someone read the wrong books, all about heroes and adventure, when they should have been studying their spellcraft." Ash laughed, because she had a good idea what books the mirror referred to. She had devoured such books back at Castle Fairhold. She had set out on her quest with a handful of wrong ideas about foraging, sleeping on the ground, building fires, hunting for food, and finding shelter. Fortunately, the ring had been there to correct her and give her better advice. The heroes of some of those adventures advocated for a certain look when conducting a siege. Some heroes were clearly more concerned with heroic stances and speeches than using common sense and accomplishing the rescue or attack as quickly as possible. Izalova excused herself, saying Glint had contacted her. Ash helped Fang get out of the much more bedraggled shirt. Sunset had progressed enough for sufficient shadows to shield him. By this time, the wagons had crossed the shallow river and were traveling up the slight incline, with Andros's tower less than a mile ahead of them. "I have good news and bad news," Izalova announced, her swirls of blue and green and purple brightening. "Glint finally got hold of Andros. He had to go through 5 nodes in the mirror web. The mirror in the castle Andros and Serena are currently cleansing of several generations of foul magic has been out of communication for nearly that long. She's constantly needing to be updated on protocols, and half the time thinks she's hallucinating when someone talks to her." Ash winced for the mirror's sake. The situation reminded her too much of Dewshine. That poor mirror might never regain her sanity. Anyway, Andros has given permission for us to go into the tower, with all the keyhole spells and several master spells to reset the shields, and raise up some emergency shields. He didn't want to put them up when he left, because the spells are so strong, Glint wouldn't be able to communicate with anyone. "How much longer will Andros and Serena be gone?" Ash asked. "Oh, they've barely begun rescuing her sisters. Two, who don't need rescuing, have gone entirely bad, and they're teaming up with the sorceresses who initiated the curse 4 generations ago to interfere with the rescue operation. But what about Glint? How long can he go entirely cut off from everyone?" "He won't be," Izalova chuckled. "That's the good news. Andros has asked us to remove all the magical artifacts, all his books, anything that he and Serena truly value, which isn't much, actually. We're to leave behind quite a lot of furniture and dishes and decorations, and an entire castle's worth of ugly tapestries, all wedding gifts from royals they didn't dare insult, and enchanters who were just trying to empty out their castles so they could redecorate. Let those idiots laying siege have them, if they ever get through the defensive spells. We're to haul everything back to the castle, and Andros will come retrieve their goods when they've taken care of the curse. And don't worry, we have plenty of room. He had the foresight to put everything they valued into several locked chests and bags of accommodation before they left. It seems he didn't quite trust several of his old school chums not to dig around and borrow things without permission. Some of them have quite sensitive feelings, and if he gave the keyhole spell to some but not the rest, there would be just too much fussing and sniping and trying to turn different members of the group against each other. The school reunions would be utter misery. Better to take some precautions and salve the touchy ones' feelings by including them. "Are magicians and wizards and such always so troublesome to deal with?" Ash asked without thinking. "Maybe dealing with magic does something to the mind?" "More like all that power does something nasty and corrosive to the heart and soul, dear." A quarter mile from Andros's tower now, and the stink of brimstone and scorched rock and burning tar reached them. Ash wished the senses that came with the wolf mask weren't quite so sharp. She thought she might be sick, and breathing through her mouth didn't reduce the pungent strength of the smell. The largest suit of armor raised its arm. The wagons stopped, and the armor climbed out, brandishing their weapons, the magic filling them flaring brighter for a few heartbeats. Then they all turned to her. "They want instructions," Izalova told her. "You're Lady Ashlyn, after all." Fang hopped up on the bench seat and gestured wildly with ears and forelegs, chattering eagerly. Ash took a moment to understand. What he said made sense, mostly because it went against the grand heroic warfare taught in those books the Purple Sky magicians had probably read when they should have been studying their spellcraft. "Fang, we need to find a spell so the books will read themselves to you, so you can study warfare. You have a great future ahead of you as a warrior, the kind who goes around rescuing others," she hurried to add, when the bunny's face wrinkled up in perplexity and a flicker of suspicion. He thought for a few moments more, then his face shifted to that manic expression she missed. He bounced out of the wagon, landed in front of the largest suit of armor, and beckoned toward the tower with his ears. None of the armor moved. They clearly didn't understand Bunny. Or, more likely, they were waiting for instructions from Ash. "I have to learn to be more careful what I say inside the castle," she muttered, as she climbed out of the wagon. She had proclaimed herself Lady Ashlyn, leader of the castle, hadn't she? The armor was taking her at her word. "Here's what we're going to do," she said, as she reached back into the wagon and brought out that shield. How had the armor known she would need it? And how much good would a shield, even a magically endowed shield, be against those purple sky magicians? The best situation was that she would never need to learn. Fang's plan was brilliantly simple. The armor would attack and distract the magicians, while Ash and Izalova reached the tower door and used the keyhole spells. When the armor had driven away the magicians, they would bring the wagons up, load them, and get out of there before the magicians returned. The plan meant keeping them from realizing the tower had been emptied of everything that would make their efforts worthwhile. Andros had even told Izalova he hoped the magicians were so infuriated when they finally got into his tower, they would destroy everything. Then he and Serena could finally redecorate the place to suit themselves, instead of bowing to everyone else's taste to avoid offending anyone. Ash carried her shield on her right arm. The largest suit of armor ran ahead of her, around the left side of the cluster of magicians who were still arguing and lobbing fireballs at each other. Meanwhile, the other suits of armor attacked from the right, distracting the magicians so they wouldn't see her get through the defenses. Fang added to the chaos, bouncing off heads and chests, his eyes glowing red. He gnashed his teeth and screamed what Ash later learned was bunny epic poetry, in between proclaiming himself the Lord of the Vampires. The magicians fled screaming, those who weren't still punching and pulling each other's hair. Four suits of armor picked them up bodily and raced away with them. Ash looked back just before she closed the tower door. The landscape surrounding the tower was a smoking wreck of puddles of tar and the smoldering remains of the magicians' wagons and tents. "Glint, we're here," Izalova called out, her greeting punctuated by Ash slamming the door and all the spells clicking into place again. "Welcome, welcome, ladies," Glint called, his voice echoing down the spiral stairs tucked in the back corner of the octagonal tower. He had an amazingly deep, booming baritone voice for such a long, skinny mirror. Ash reckoned she would have to stand sideways to the mirror to see herself fully in him. "I haven't had such fun in a long time. You really must introduce me to the bunny. Are they truly as magical as I've heard?" "You'll have plenty of time to chat with Fang on the way back," she said. "Let's get you loaded and get us out of here as swiftly as possible. We don't want those imbeciles following us back through the portal." Far faster than Ash had dared to hope, they had the trunks and bags of accommodation floating on a handy levitation spell that Glint had pulled out of an old book Andros had been intending to repair. The wagons pulled up to the littered yard in front of the tower just moments before Izalova triggered the spells to open the door. The suits of armor were nowhere to be seen. Ash hoped they were busy chasing the magicians all over the countryside and hadn't been shattered, maybe their magic drained away. The wagons started rolling back down the road as soon as she climbed into the front wagon. Glint was propped up against the footboards of the driver's bench, so he could see the countryside as they passed. Fang crouched on the bench seat next to him, with Izalova back in her box. The shimmering, chiming language of the mirrors spilled through the night as they traveled. Either the sound or the heavy scent of magic in the air kept away all the animals, and maybe even the people they would have encountered on the way. Ash couldn't understand the mirrors, but clearly Fang did. She grew drowsy, having nothing to do but ride. She didn't want to fall asleep. She had the awful feeling that if she did, she would wake up days later, once again dressed in flouncy, fluttery, glittery clothes. The third time she felt herself sliding forward and jerked awake, she jumped down off the wagon and ran alongside it. The fresh air rushing past her, the intoxicating soup of scents, the music of the life of the countryside, made her heart race and sent a howl bubbling up in her throat. She didn't let it out, though keeping it back made her throat ache a few times. They were less than a mile from the portal when the suits of armor caught up with them. And someone else. Glint called out, "Oh, no!" and Fang yelped and leaped off the wagon. A flash of yellow-tinted light shot down in front of the leaning sheaves of wheat that framed the portal. For half a second, Ash thought they would burst into flame. The light expanded into a sheet, shimmering and crackling with angry energy, blocking the portal. The wagons slid to a stop. The suits of armor spread out from the two parallel lines they had been running in, with the largest suit at their head, and surrounded the wagons. Or more accurately, Ash realized, they surrounded her. "I am the lady of the castle, after all," she admitted, and wasn't sure if that made her feel better or more apprehensive. "What do you want?" she called out, and followed her nose to the scent of stronger magic, tingling in the air, an almost visible cord of energy connecting it with the sheet blocking the portal. "Thieves don't get to ask questions," a man called in a mellow tenor. "They're not thieves, Brandywise," Glint called, You really should stop listening to Santas, especially when he's had more than 2 cups of wine. He chuckled and added in a softer tone, which is all the time, even when he's asleep. Glint, what threats are they holding over you? A line of yellow light shot down to land between the blocked portal and the suits of armor. It expanded to another sheet of light. Ash wondered just how few tricks this magician had at his disposal. Or maybe he just didn't care about variety and impressing people with showmanship. That would be a refreshing change after what she had learned about magicians and enchanters and such folk. A man, most likely this Brandywice, stepped through the sheet of light. He was dressed in browns and golds and yellows. Ash supposed that was his signature color. If that was something he learned in the Enchanter's School, she agreed with Izalova that the concept wasn't a very good idea. No threats at all. And if you had come to help me when those intruders first set up their attack, we wouldn't be here, the mirror boomed back. These folk have rescued me and all Andros's treasures. Before you start shouting about evil magic suborning my free will, talk to him yourself. There was a pause. Ash glanced back to see a young man with caramel-toned skin and red-gold hair peering out of Glint over the side of the wagon. Some help here, please, he said. Ash climbed up into the wagon, just because she didn't think the suits of armor were going to let Brandywice get past them. She turned Glint around and propped him up on the bench seat, so Andros could look out through him and talk to his friend. Ha! You caught them! Lovely! A slurred sort of voice caroled. A splash of greenish-yellow light hit the road behind the circle of armor, and a saggy, baggy man with a large bald patch, straggly, dirty hair, and pockmarked skin staggered out of it. He held a skin of wine in one hand and raised it in salute, then brought his empty hand up to start to pour. He caught himself and stared at his hand, clearly expecting a cup to be there. "Someone take Santas home and put a sober-up spell on him," Andros said. "Bran, I swear, I asked these kind folk to take my things away to protect them." "Folk?" Brandywice gestured at Ash. "What sort of curse are you under? Who do you serve?" he demanded. "You are not to talk to Lady Ashlyn of the Enchanted Castle in such tones," Izalova called out. Her tones were chilly enough. Ash thought she saw circles and whorls of frost gather on the metal parts of the wagon. Fang chirped and snarled and bounced up and down. Viciously enough, Brandywice took 2 steps back.
We hope you enjoyed today's chapter. For more information on all the books and series featured in this podcast, or to purchase the ebook or audiobook for future reading and listening pleasure, please visit yeolddragonbooks.com. You can also find more information about our books and purchase ebooks on our Patreon page, Ye Old Dragons Library. Please consider supporting the podcast to gain access to free stories or discounts, or a chance to purchase a new book in advance of release. Thanks for listening to this episode of Ye Old Dragons Library.